Well, not only happy Thursday, but also happy New Year. Hope you had a wonderful holiday break, and now it's back to regular life here on Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being back with us here for another adventure into the unknown as we go through all kinds of topics of interest to the community in and around Florida's capital city, the Big Bend area, North Florida, South Georgia, and all the environs close by. Of course, now through the wonders of the internet, we can be wherever you are, and that even means other countries. We have people occasionally who will pop in and voice their opinion or ask a question, even if they are outside of the United States. And even if you're closer to home, you can do that at 414-1234, our local number. Long distance, twixt you and us, it's 800-926-8809, and perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. Well, today's conventional wisdom suggests that slavery is something that kind of went away in the wake of the American Civil War, but slavery goes on unabated throughout the world and even in our part of the world. And the term most commonly used to describe the various manifestations nowadays is human trafficking. Worldwide, the estimate for the number of people enslaved today is about 21 million. And that number isn't just confined to backwards third world countries, for sure. Human trafficking, very much a part of our world, even right here in the area of North Florida and South Georgia. So we're going to be talking about that today and trying to raise awareness. And perhaps you have even seen human trafficking in operation in your day-to-day life and you didn't know what you were seeing. So we hope to bring some of that enlightenment to you today, too, as well as what's being done to deal with this scourge on a local and even a national level. So let's go around the table and meet our panel. We start off with a gentleman by the name of Frank Williams. He's assistant U.S. attorney in Gainesville. He drove all the way up from there and is with us in lieu of U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Florida, Chris Canova, who's a little bit under the weather today. And Frank, you have my admiration for that long drive just to come up and be with us today. Thanks so much, Tom.
It's being here is my pleasure. I really appreciate it. This is human trafficking is a priority for our office as well as the Department of Justice, and I'm really excited to be here and speak to the issue of public awareness and education.
Can't wait to tap your expertise and awareness on that, Frank.
Yes, sir.
Joining us by phone is Bethany Gilo. She joined the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice back in 2014 after working at various nonprofit organizations serving sex trafficking victims and survivors in both Miami and West Bengal, India. And Bethany, we welcome you to Perspectives, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for the invite. I love any opportunity I get to share on the great work that Florida is doing to address this topic.
Well, we appreciate your participation in that, too. And kind of being the ring mistress for the whole thing is Robin Hassler, Executive Director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, of which so many things are going on here. You brought an entire listing of happenings under the auspices of the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking. Robin, and good to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for having this program, Tom. We really appreciate it.
Well, why don't we start off with you since we're in your neck of the woods here, Robin, and to talk a little bit about busting down some of these conventional wisdom myths that are out there, that human trafficking is so rare, we never see it unless there's, you know, something that maybe pops up in the news. I remember it was, a couple years ago, up in the Killarney area, which is for the folks who don't know, a fairly affluent part of the Tallahassee area, there was a safe house for human trafficking. And that was a big, big deal. And many people were surprised to find out, my God, it does happen here.
Absolutely. And in fact, that was the first large case. It was the Melchor and Monsalve case that was prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office here in North Florida. And it was a sex trafficking case, as you said, in Killarney. And thanks to the collaborative work of Tallahassee Police Department, local law enforcement, victim services agencies, you know, the Center for the Advancement of Human Rights here at FSU, work was done collaboratively to make sure that those traffickers went to prison. And in fact, it turned out that the trafficking was not just taking place here. It was taking place in other parts of Florida and outside of Florida. There was a whole ring that two very, very brave young women, when they escaped, helped law enforcement to discover and prosecutions to take place.
Bethany Gelo, since that is kind of under your bailiwick, and we had mentioned you've worked in both Miami and West Bengal, India, I think a large number of people would say, well, certainly in the subcontinent over there, in Thailand, and midnight in Bangkok, all these kinds of misperceptions that we have, that's where this stuff happens, and it doesn't happen here. But as Robin says, it occurs right under our very noses right here, right?
Yes, certainly. I always tell people when I do trainings on human trafficking, I started in this field in Miami, and unfortunately, there's a lot of security, job security, and if you're working in the anti-trafficking field, because unfortunately it's a growing issue in terms of awareness and identification, and I never had a shortage of cases and referrals on my desk of 11 to 18-year-old girls who were survivors of trafficking, and we were trying to get to work with them as victim advocates. Certainly never had a shortage. Of course, it was a huge problem over in India as well. Looked a little bit different in terms of how the recruitment and et cetera was happening, but we saw cases all the time in Miami and from all over the state of Florida and from all over the United States, especially during the winter months. We had a lot more youth being trafficked from outside of the Miami area down into Miami just due to the beautiful weather that Florida offers all year round. So it's certainly something that is happening on our home turf here in the state of Florida, and that is always a message that I try to drive home to anybody who is willing to listen.
And Frank Williams, how can the average person tell that something like this is going on, that they are not soliciting this kind of activity, they're not involved in it, but can you see it happening and then make that known to local or even national law enforcement? How can you tell?
The answer is yes, and I want to follow up with what Robin said. She mentioned the corroboration and collaboration between the different agencies in the case that occurred here in Tallahassee, and that really is the key to a successful prosecution, is you've got to have identification, the investigation, victim services, and the prosecution agencies all working together, putting the cases together. And that's why there wasn't the success in that particular case and many other cases that have occurred here in the Northern District. Since I've been in Gainesville in the last several years, I know it's really common for people to say, human trafficking happened here in Gainesville? No, it can't be. But then I point to the fact that in the last several years, we've had 12 successful prosecutions of human traffickers in Gainesville, in the Gainesville area alone. So this is something that's real. It's happening right now, right here in our community, all throughout North Florida, actually throughout the United States. And it's much more prevalent than what people understand it to be.
Yeah. And how do you see it? Do you say, oh my God, something doesn't look right here?
You know, there are a lot of ways to see it. And also, there's a whole campaign, a PR campaign that's been based on the fact that sometimes it's right in front of our very eyes and we don't see it. So if you're driving by a field and you see people picking tomatoes, you might say, oh, those are people picking tomatoes. That doesn't look illegal to me. But in fact, those could be trafficked workers right there. That could be labor trafficking happening because you can't see that they're not getting paid. You can't see that they are being housed in trailers, 13 men to a trailer, or you can't see how they've been forced to be here and threatened if they call police that they'll be deported or beaten or their family will be harmed or they will be harmed. You don't see kind of the coercion and the threats that take place that keep people in traffic situations. And one of the things that we're working real hard on, and as both the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking, as well as our newer organization, the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, is raising the awareness so that when people see, they might see that, but then when they take a step and go deeper, they might see something. For example, they might look at that field and see a child. Or they might, you know, they might see something that doesn't look quite right. We talk to people in government, for example, if they do restaurant inspections. Well, if they go back into the kitchen and see a cot, you know, people shouldn't be sleeping in a kitchen or a nail salon. In the back of the nail salon, you see people with looking like they're living there. That's a clue. So It's on the surface, it might look okay, but when you go just under the surface, you might see something strange. We've also seen cases of, and law enforcement tells us this all the time, that Good Samaritans have made such a difference in calling human trafficking to the attention of law enforcement. There was a case in South Florida where a neighbor saw a small child bathing outside in the hose. There were children in that home, but one child seemed to always be bathing outside, sometimes never going to the bus stop, sometimes going to the bus stop or not playing with the other children. She called the DCF hotline and said, something's not right with this child. Well, that child was being enslaved in that home. And so that call helped somebody, as you're saying, something doesn't look quite right. We really encourage people to say, you know, this doesn't look quite right. And it might be anything in any work situation because labor trafficking and sex trafficking are happening all around us.
It's back to the old, I guess, Bethany, see something, say something, huh?
Yeah, I actually just talked with a Pensacola task force yesterday about that very same thing. If you have a gut feeling that something's wrong, of course, learning the indicators for trafficking is helpful. But if you have a gut feeling that something's wrong, say something. I tell them it's not just you're falsely accusing somebody of committing a crime. It's that you're intervening on the behalf of that potential victim. And if it's a possibility to get Department of Health to go in there and to do an inspection, or to get DCF to go in there and do an investigation, or to get airport security to kind of just keep an eye on a situation, that's not hurting anybody. It could potentially be life-saving for somebody.
We're talking about human trafficking, the prevalence of that, the surprising prevalence, even in our area today on Perspectives. And our guests are Frank Williams, Assistant U.S. Attorney out of Gainesville, Bethany Gilo from the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice, and Robin Hassler, Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, and a lot of things coming up in our area in regards to human trafficking and building awareness and all of that that we're going to talk about on the other side of this rapidly upcoming break. We invite, of course, your conversation to be part of our conversation here on Perspectives at 414-1234. If it's long distance, 800-926-8809 and perspectives@wfsu.org if you want to email us. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives. And again, hope you had a wonderful, wonderful holiday break and Happy New Year and all of that. And we're, again, discussing the prevalence and the response to human trafficking, even in our area today, with Robin Hassler. Thompson? I stand corrected. Thank you so much, Robin. Also, Frank Williams from Gainesville, U.S. Assistant Attorney down there, and Bethany Gilo from DJJ, Department of Juvenile Justice. Robin, while we're on the subject here of many things that the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking is holding, even as we speak today, just give us a thumbnail of some of those events that are going on here just within the next couple weeks.
Sure. I'd be glad to, and we really encourage everybody to come. These are events that are geared to the general public, geared to people who are in special areas of professional work. For example, a week from today, in the 5:30 to 7:30 slot, we're having a program for healthcare providers, everyone from physicians, nurses, dentists, hygienists, osteopaths, social workers, that they could come and get a two-hour training that will fulfill their domestic violence requirements, because we do this program to compare and contrast human trafficking with domestic violence. There are differences and important similarities as well. That's happening. There is an arts event that by the end of tomorrow, we hope to have submissions where we have artists in our community submitting works of art, sculptures, paintings, photographs, whatever, depicting both the horrors of trafficking and the freedom of what happens when you are out of that situation. It's, in fact, it's called Imagining Freedom, A Call to End Human Trafficking. People can find out about this by going on the surviveandthriveadvocacy.org website and see how to do that. We've got, at the end of the month, a big legal program for lawyers. We want lawyers to understand this issue more, to represent victims both on the civil side as well as on the criminal side. So we'll be having our new sheriff, Walt McNeil, is going to be part of that, as well as people that are coming in from around the country. Real rock stars on this issue of human trafficking are going to come in and help our legal community get involved. On the 14th, it's Saturday. This is Martin Luther King weekend at First Baptist Church. We're having a call to the faith community called Keeping Faith, Human Trafficking, and a Call to Action. So that's taking place from 9 to 11:30. And even right now, we have a training program going now on at the Kearney Center with education of people who assist the homeless in our community, because we know homeless folks are vulnerable to being trafficked and may, in fact, be there because they are escaping trafficking. So, gosh, there isn't probably a place. We're having a 5K run. We're showing films. There's so much going on. We really want people to come out and take a part of it.
Boy, there is no excuse not to be aware of the situation after all of those goings on. But even once people are aware and they blow the whistle and you get law enforcement involved, I'm thinking, Frank Williams, this has got to be a bugaboo bear. I just coined that term. It's a legal phrase, as I'm sure you know, to prosecute, because, number one, all of these things, whether it's sex trafficking, labor trafficking, operates very, very deep underground. They are market-driven, which is incredibly tough to overcome, because there's a demand for these kinds of things, and the victims can feel like perpetrators, or are made to feel like perpetrators by the people who keep them enslaved, right?
Yes, earlier I mentioned some of our successful prosecutions in the Northern District, and I want to point out that every one of these cases is victim-driven. And if you don't have victim stabilization and recovery, you will not have a successful prosecution. So really, the unsung heroes of all of the cases that we have made previously and are making today are people who work in victim services. And that is the reality. And every investigation, every prosecution, the key aspect of those, the success, was the fact that we had a victim who was able to come into the courtroom and testify with respect to what happened to them. And absent that, we would not have had a successful case.
Bethany Gelo, that has got to be really rough for particularly young women who are victims of sex trafficking and have been told by their captors, essentially, you know, you better not say anything because we'll kill you, we'll kill your family, even if they come from some other country. And besides, they are, meaning the law agencies and the judicial system, they are going to put you away for the rest of your life. How do you get these people to come forward and say, hey, I was victimized?
Right. Well, that is a fantastic question, and truly, you're exactly right. There's whatever the trafficker can use to coerce that individual, whether they know they have a great relationship with their family, so maybe the trafficker will threaten their family. Maybe the person isn't a U.S. citizen or isn't here legally, so they're going to threaten deportation. Or with a young person, I know a lot of the young ladies I used to work with, it wasn't as much threats as it is, you know, I'm your boyfriend, I love you, if you love me, you'll do this. And so it's really more of a loving bond there, even though the trafficker is abusing them and the trafficker may be asking them to do things that very much hurts them and is not what they want to do. They're still seeing this as a loving bond, and that they don't want to turn on that person. They don't want to testify against this person who they love and they think loves them. So the trafficker, they're really looking for ways to manipulate those that they're victimizing. So it's you have to kind of, from the opposite side, find what method that trafficker used to recruit them, and then kind of work from there. And a lot of it is just transformational relationships and standing by, walking alongside that victim, being consistent, making sure that they know that you're always there for them, making sure that they know that, you know, they don't have to testify until they're ready, even though we know that we really do want them to be able to testify against their trafficker. It can be a very healing process for the victim, but not until they're ready. And it's just kind of really going alongside with them, walking alongside them, being consistent, being there for them, letting them kind of be where they're at while also creating a safe environment around them until they're ready to come forward and speak against their trafficker, because it is a very, very difficult thing for a lot of our victims to do.
Wow, it sounds like almost the ultimate expression of Stockholm Syndrome.
It yes. can be sometimes.
Very much so.
Yeah, and you know, the other part about this that's so compelling, and it's been compelling for me to observe, is how expert traffickers are at targeting the vulnerabilities of individuals. And as we try to help them, we need to understand those vulnerabilities. For example, one of the myths I think that's out there is that, either victims are children, or they're victims of sex trafficking, or they're from another country. But, you know, we've had cases here in Florida. In Palatka, there was a big case where the trafficker farm labor operation targeted homeless African-American men who were dependent on drugs and alcohol, substance abuse dependent, went around to homeless shelters around the state, picked them up in these white vans, brought them to the farm in Palatka, and enslaved them, forced them to pick vegetables, and promised to pay them with drugs and alcohol. And indeed, when the FBI went in there and did that investigation, found out they were keeping those workers enslaved by making sure they stayed drug dependent. Making sure that at that, you know, when the EPA went in to investigate it, they went in there because they saw this farm operation dumping human waste into the St. John's River. So EPA went in there, looked around, said something doesn't look right here, the way people were being housed, razor wire going in, for example, facing in so people couldn't escape. They said something's not right. They called the FBI. The FBI goes in, sees all this, does the investigation, and it's a human trafficking operation. So that's one of the myths also to talk about for people to understand.
Yeah, I remember, what was that, Frank Williams, back many, many years ago, a lot of runaways, particularly out of the Minneapolis area, were being coerced into essentially prostitution and sex trafficking networks and that sort of thing. And we think of the victims as, you know, poor young women from Bangladesh or somewhere, but they can actually be right here in our own communities too that feed into this.
Absolutely. And in many times I found that, especially with children, they don't perceive of themselves as a victim. In fact, if you refer to them as a victim, that will be the end of your communication line. They think that they engage in this as an adult, and they're making adult decisions, and they don't understand how they're being manipulated. And that's a big part of why I say it's so important to have effective victim services to help them to understand and comprehend exactly the harm that's occurring to them.
Well, we see we just talked about that, the farms and some of the other places where this might occur. Bethany Gilo, I know we had in this area a number of prosecutions involving, of all things, massage parlors. We don't think of Tallahassee in terms of having massage parlors, but boy, there seem to be suddenly a bunch of them, and not saying that any specific ones may be connected with illicit activity. But is that kind of business also a potential place where things like this can happen?
Yeah, certainly. And actually, recent national statistics from the National Human Trafficking Resource Center have shown that commercial front businesses is one of the most common places that victims in Florida are being trafficked. So it's certainly something we're seeing on a regular basis. That could be massage parlors, that could be nail salons, things along those lines, where there could actually be legitimate business happening in that business as well. But again, like Robin mentioned earlier, what else is going on? Are the nail techs trafficking victims as well? Are the folks working in the massage parlors, are they also being forced to participate in commercial sex activities? So that's certainly a method and I think some traffickers are kind of drawn to things like this because, again, you can have a legitimate-looking business with a legitimate-looking front for funding coming in, but exploitation is happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder, again, why suddenly there's a plethora of these kinds of things that suddenly spring up. Where did the demand come from? You know, why didn't we have this 15, 20 years ago? And suddenly now it's almost like the old convenience store syndrome. There's almost one on every corner. You think, is that kind of weird?
Sex trafficking has been a part of human history. It's been occurring around us forever. It's just more evident to us today. And I think probably the biggest format for it occurring is in internet advertising websites. I guarantee you to go to any of the city here in the U.S., you're going to find sex trafficking occurring. You can go online right now in Tallahassee. You're going to find sex trafficking occurring right here. The lowest rung of sex trafficking are when you see women on the street, on the street corners. That's something that I think that's another misconception that the public has, is that's where sex trafficking occurs involving adult women. That's not true. And it's simply a profit-driven, you know, matter, and that's why the women on the street are not going to be making as much as a woman who's advertising herself through one of these advertising websites. And that's why it's more profitable, and that's why it's occurring in that manner.
Yeah, and that whole social networking thing that we now have online, and Robin Hassler Thompson, that's got to be yet another challenge that you have to deal with, because you don't even have to see it in the open. It's all happening down there.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we really want law enforcement and others to understand is that this is a place where you can start your investigation just now. You can start to look and see what's going on in our area. And the other part of our work with STAC and with our agency and our public awareness is really to get into some of the areas like Wakulla County, Franklin County, Gaston County, Jefferson, Liberty, all the areas around us, because so much of our focus can be just here in Leon County, because that's where a lot of agencies are housed and that's where there's a greater population focus. But I promise you that this activity, what Frank just talked about, as well as the labor activities are going on in these rural areas. And it's one of our deep missions is to make sure that we do reach into those areas. And a lot of the activities for this month, for example, we really want folks to see what's going on and come and become more involved in the issue.
Bethany Gilo, I am fascinated with what the rehabilitation angle of this might be, as far as a victim bravely comes forward and aids with the prosecution and the perps get put away and all of that. Now what do you do with the young victim of sex trafficking or labor trafficking? What happens to them after?
Right. Well, we have some fantastic resources in the state of Florida that are available to our victims, primarily sex trafficking victims, but we do have some available for labor trafficking victims as well. We actually have 4 safe houses in the state of Florida that serve specifically minor females who have been sex trafficking victims. So it's a safe safe foster home of where young ladies who have been trafficked can go and find a safe environment, a therapeutic environment. We have drop-in centers. We have counseling facilities that are able to counsel these kids. So there's quite a few services available. And it really is important to engage this population in particular with specialized services, just because of the level of trauma that many of our victims have experienced. And it's very individualized in terms of what type of treatment that individual may need. It may need housing, may need food, may need clothing, may need therapeutic services. But it's so you have to kind of develop an individualized service plan. There's all sorts of services available to serve this population. And really the most important thing are those transformational relationships, somebody who is consistent, who can be by their side and walk through them and who that person can rely on. And if they do have a relapse and might run away, they can call that person and say, "Hey, I ran away. I don't want to be out on the run. Can you come pick me up?" And it's 2:00 in the morning and you jump out of bed and you go pick them up. It's things like that that really help these victims kind of get through that healing process.
Well, Robin Hassler Thompson, given the need for additional folks, I think, to be involved in that, is the coalition in the market for volunteer help, more community resources, faith-based organizations, whatever?
Absolutely. And I'd encourage people to look at the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking's Facebook page. as well as to contact STAC, because just what Bethany said, it is important to know that we do have we have a foundation of some services for some population of trafficking victims. But there's no way we're going to build enough shelters or have enough specialized programs, standalone programs. I think the best thing we're going to be able to do and the most efficient is to make sure everybody who is a potential contact point for a survivor of trafficking know what to do. So we leverage their expertise into understanding what is trafficking, because that's how STAC got formed. Is the idea is we want to sort of rising tide lift all boats, let everybody get what they need in terms of their capacity and understanding about the issue to help a victim if they need someone to provide emergency case management, to be a second chair to them as they assist. For example, I talked to Disc Village and Kearney Center and many local programs, and they do great work. They just need to have the depth around trafficking so they can identify someone. And if they need extra help with getting a tattoo removed from someone, getting dental care, getting housing, that they would contact us and we would reach out to community agencies, again, link everybody up. Resources are scarce in our world, and we've got to do our best with what we got, and we have to deepen our knowledge about this, and that's why STAC exists. And I can promise you, anybody out there, whether faith community, healthcare, legal, next-door neighbor, retirees, educators, there isn't anybody who wouldn't be welcome to the Big Bend Coalition and wouldn't have a role in understanding more what to do and how to get help to someone who needs it.
Certainly, you can do
it. The tattoo removal is a huge thing. So people think, I'm just a tattoo artist, what am I going to do? I'm just a work at a grocery store, what can I do? It's a really all hands on deck approach in terms of identifying this population, serving this population, donating food, donating tattoo removals, donating gift cards. That's all something that anybody can do.
I love that phrase, Bethany, all hands on deck. And we'll be returning to this deck momentarily right after the upcoming timeout on Perspectives, talking about human trafficking, how surprisingly prevalent it is all over, including our area. And we want your input too at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. We're back on Perspective, starting off a brand new year with the human trafficking situation, timely because of all the events that are going on in our area and the impact that this problem has in the North Florida, South Georgia area, with our expert panel, Frank Williams, assistant U.S. attorney in Gainesville, Bethany Gilo from the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice, and the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, or STAC, Lord High Head Honchoette, Robin Hassler Thompson, here with us today. Hey, a reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to that address, click on Radio, pull down the Programs menu, and click Perspectives. We archive past shows, and usually within a couple of 3 hours of the conclusion of each show, we have it up there online so you can go back and listen to it as many times as you want. Well, let's throw it over to you for a second, Frank Williams, as far as getting, we talked about community resources on board. You got to have local law enforcement on hand too. And I would suspect, knowing as many old time cops as I do, a lot of these folks think, oh man, it doesn't happen here. Or if it does, well, it's just, you know, it's a shame, but not much you can do about it. And it's more a thing for the feds because of the international connections and all that kind of thing. How do you get those guys on board?
Well, first off, there's no doubt that investigating these cases takes a unique level of experience and training and skill. And we earlier talked a little bit about some of the misconceptions involved, especially with sex trafficking. And some of those misconceptions have spilled over into law enforcement as well. One of the misconceptions is that the victims in these cases are involved in this willingly. And that's completely wrong. What they don't understand, and what actually for a long time I didn't understand, is the aspect of force and fraud and coercion that has bled a lot of these children and young women to engage in this kind of activity, if you will. And the fact that we have kind of stigmatized an element of society that essentially women involved in prostitution into believing that they are the persons who are most culpable, when in fact they are the victims themselves. And so kind of breaking through that misconception and helping law enforcement to understand that these children and these women, that they are in fact being victimized and they are being coerced to engage in these kind of actions. And helping to understand when I say coercion, the principal form of coercion is addiction. And helping them to understand how addiction can overcome someone's voluntariness and their willingness to involve themselves in actions that no one else would ever conceive of being involved in. And then the long-term mental health effects that has on them. That's a big challenge when dealing with law enforcement. And as well as a lot of the indicators that we've spoken about here, some of which Robin talked about earlier, helping law enforcement to understand just what those indicators are as well. As I said, these cases take a certain level of experience and training and skill that most law enforcement agencies just don't have. And that's why I'm really proud to see agencies like FDLE, and even some of the larger federal agencies like the FBI spending a lot more time training their investigators to understand and identify these victims, the issues related with them, and the indicators of what's actually occurring behind the scenes. I also want to point out that a lot of these cases are there's indicators of organized crime being involved. And law enforcement needs to understand that these cases aren't just about human trafficking, but a lot of these cases also involve narcotics trafficking, use of firearms, robberies. All of this is involved because all of these are profit-driven crimes.
Yeah, and for outlying areas like you were saying, Robin Hassler-Thompson, it can be very daunting because there you are, a small county law agency, a sheriff's department, and you have essentially a Wasissa CSI situation blowing up in your backyard, and you don't have the capability to deal with that usually.
Exactly, and I'm so grateful for what Frank just said, because that expertise, as it develops, then could mean that someone in, say, Wakulla County could call FDLE and bring them in and can call the feds in and to work together to make these cases and maybe decide, you know, this would be better prosecuted by the state or the feds. But it really, until you get that in-depth investigation. And then it's also important to realize that chances are someone who's trafficking is probably committing many crimes. They are probably committing a host of health and safety regulation violations. They're probably not paying their taxes. That's the old, you know, get Al Capone on not paying taxes thing. They're doing many different things. They're committing physical violence against the victims, as well as a whole host of other crimes. So law enforcement really does know about these issues. They've been, are making arrests and doing investigations. It's just how do you put the pieces together and see the whole range of criminal activity that's taking place.
Okay, and Bethany Gilo, I know you are not a registered lobbyist. Absolutely not. We're not going to do any of that here on the air, but we're coming up here on a legislative session. You have committee weeks forthcoming in which some preliminary budgetary stuff is going to be talked about by our lawmakers, and I would suspect that DJJ and some other state government agencies are going to need some more help in this regard too, right?
Yeah, well, actually, it's a fantastic opportunity for me to brag on some of the great work our legislators have done over the past few years. We really, as a state approach, couldn't be where we were without some of the fantastic laws that Governor Scott signed through in the past year that our legislative body has put through, including just this past year when House Bill 545 was passed that mandated that we no longer arrest people under the age of 18 for prostitution, which is a fantastic win in terms of making sure that we're recognizing everybody involved in commercial sex under the age of 18 is a victim, and ensuring that we have funding going through for our safe houses, for our agencies to be able to serve these populations. They have been fantastic. I am really excited to see what our legislative body puts forward this session. I'm really excited to see what new laws are proposed. We are always working with the Statewide Council on Human Trafficking to come up with recommendations, which Secretary Daley from DJJ sits on, to come up with recommendations about what next legislative moves do we need to make. So I always look forward to session to see what new innovative laws that we're going to push forward, and there hasn't been a session passed by yet that hasn't been really exciting and had some fantastic legislation coming out.
Okay, and Frank Williams, from the federal level here, incoming new administration, a lot of newbies in a brand new Congress and all of that. Are you getting the help from the Department of Justice that you need in the U.S. Attorney's Office to handle this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Human trafficking has been and will continue to be a priority of the Department of Justice and the Office of the U.S. Attorney here in the Northern District. But I do want to make a couple points. One, I came here today because I want to speak truth. And I want everybody that's within earshot of my voice to understand that we are never going to investigate and prosecute human trafficking away. It is not going to happen. The key to eliminating human trafficking is better public awareness and education, and that is it, and that is the truth. And you cannot rely on the government to resolve this matter. This is an issue. It's more effective to prevent these crimes from happening than having to investigate, prosecute them, and then help these victims recover from what has occurred to them. And that's really sometimes it's the missing element in our efforts is what do we got to do to stop this from happening? Now, with respect to labor trafficking, that's all driven by greed and money and profit, and we know that. But folks, with respect to sex trafficking, that's driven 99% by one thing, and that is men buying sex, men who are willing to purchase other people to gratify themselves. And that's where we need to be. We need to help men understand that that kind of behavior is not acceptable. You cannot buy somebody else for your own gratification. This is not a political, a moral, or religious issue. This is about our humanity. You know, I've heard men say, well, you know, men have this biological drive and it's only natural. Well, you know, we also have a biological drive to eat, but we're not cannibals. We don't eat each other. We're not animals. So men need to understand the ramifications of what they're doing when they involve themselves in these kinds of crimes. Buying sex is not acceptable for men. And that's really a big part of what is – well, actually, that's all that's driving human trafficking from the sex trafficking aspect.
And yet we have seen on a number of levels where things that were at one time, if not accepted, at least kind of shoved aside and, well, that's the way the world is. Boys will be boys, whatever, have now become criminalized. There is a social stigma attached to it. I'm thinking of things like domestic violence and DUI and these kinds of things that at one time it was, oh, that's just the way the world is. You can't stop it. And now, by gosh, if not stopped, it has certainly been mitigated. And that's the same way here, Robin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that shining the light on it, as Frank just said, is so, so important. And saying that there's a clear message that we are standing with the victims. We are standing with people who are being harmed by this. And really, when it comes to this issue, too, of sex trafficking in particular, I will guarantee you at least 90% of these children, boys and girls, and then, you know, also think about what's going on in terms of the LGBTQ community, that there are vulnerabilities there that come from probably prior sexual violence against them. When we see our runaway children, for example, we see children that are on the streets who are escaping violent homes because they have been victims of sexual abuse. So this is an issue that has so many tentacles that goes into so many parts of our society that when we see a survivor, we need to recognize that person who's probably been through hell and back before they've even come to the attention of any of us, and understand that helping victims and helping them get through this can be a lifetime quest. And where are each of us in the community along the lifespan of that person in helping them, including helping them economically? And we cannot get away from what Frank just said, is this is driven by greed and money. And until we make victims whole financially, until we understand that the shrinking middle class, the increasing impoverishment of our world and our community is resulting in people being desperate and going anywhere to find work, to find medicine for their families, to feed themselves. Until we realize that this is connected to the increasing impoverishment of society, the increased greed of people in exploiting fellow human beings. We're not going to address this issue. And one of the things, too, in addition to what everybody can do, I want to mention this, is the supply chain issue. We have to understand what we're consuming as consumers. We talk about what's organic, what's fair trade and all that. What is slavery free? You know, where are we staying when we go to a hotel to make sure that the housekeeping staff hasn't been trafficked? What questions are we asking about what we buy at the grocery store? The Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Florida has done an amazing job looking at tomatoes and having a fair food campaign about that. What are we doing as active consumers as well as, you know, fellow citizens being of service?
And what, Bethany Gilo, is being done to, as the Department of Children and Families did so effectively over the past several years, putting a face on the foster child situation? You don't want to re-victimize the victims, but are there any efforts underway to show the face of human trafficking when it comes to the victims so that people are less inclined to say, oh, well, they somehow are responsible for their own plight?
Yeah, well, I think both Frank and Robin touched on this really well. It comes down to humanity and just thinking of every person is a human. Putting yourself in their shoes, would you have wanted to deal with an ounce of this? Probably not. And I think that that's just making sure that we do have survivors out there, survivor leadership out there that are wanting to tell their story and willing to tell their story so that there can be actual faces put to it of people that are ready to tell their story. But also in public service announcements and ad campaigns, making sure that all faces of our various victims are being represented, making sure that there's PSAs that mention that boys are victims as well, making sure that there's advertisements that show labor trafficking victims on billboards and not just sex trafficking victims on billboards and representations just in the media to make sure that people understand that anybody can be a victim and making sure that our staff at all of our government agencies that are direct care agencies, that they understand what these spaces look like. It's a consistent effort. And we've seen a lot more community kids, which would be non-foster care kids that have become victims of this in the past few years, an increase from just being foster care kids to being community kids as well with the recruitment via social media and things along those lines. And so just making sure that we are giving representation to all the various types of victims.
And also having more of the community involved in being on the lookout for these sorts of things and being more aware of what's going on. And in the moment or so we have left, Robin Hassler-Thompson, if you could again give us a quick thumbnail of the upcoming events that the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking has coming up that we can all get involved with.
Absolutely. So we've got the call to artists again by tomorrow at midnight to submit your artwork to surviveandthriveadvocacy.org. Go on the website. You can see that program and many others. Also, to look at the healthcare community, a big program on January 12th from 5:30 to 7:30. The Faith Communities event is going to be January 14th at First Baptist Church, 9 a.m. There'll be a 5K run at FSU on January 21st. Two films, both very compelling, very young girls, on January 21 at Bread and Roses, and then Food Chains, which is going to be shown at FSU Dodd Hall in the evening. The legal community, really with the great work of the Tallahassee Women Lawyers and other legal organizations, are having a program at the law school on January 26th in the afternoon, and another one at the courthouse on January 27th, and we'll be capping off our month with a arts community event at Lemoyne the evening of the 27th, where we'll have a reception and a kind of celebration of the great work of this community hosted by STAC, and that's a fundraiser for our organization. I also wanted to leave people, too, with, you know, you might have folks out there who are going, well, what do I do? Well, know that there's a National Human Trafficking Hotline. You know, it's 888-3737-888, which will connect anyone to any kind of services and help from law enforcement and information. And again, our website, surviveandthriveadvocacy.org, we've got a ton of resources on that, too. so people can go on there and see what's going on in our community and maybe be a part of it.
Oh, thanks so much, Robin. And go ahead,
Tom, Frank. I want to say that I speak on the subject very frequently, and probably the most common question I get is, yes, this is a problem, but what can I do about it? Well, if you're listening to this program, Robin just explained to you what you can do, so please get involved.
And just one final thought from you, Ms. Bethany Gelo, if we could, here in the 30 seconds we have left.
Yeah, I just like Frank and echoing that, Frank and Robin, there's so many events to get involved in the community. There's so many different websites you can go to, Survive and Thrive, advocacy.org. Like Robin mentioned, there's also Shared Hope International. There's the Polaris Project website, the National Human Trafficking Resource Center website, the DOJ's Blue Campaign. They all have information, free materials, more webinars, trainings you can watch. So just if you want to find information, it's out there. So just look for that information and educate yourself and learn how to become a community advocate for this population.
Bethany Gelo, Frank Williams, and Robin Hasler-Thompson, thank you all for coming on Perspectives today and enlightening us on a situation that I bet a lot of us didn't even know existed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
And Happy New Year to all. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance from Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls handling the interface back there. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, a preview of an upcoming Tallahassee effort to try and rebuild the sense of community that used to be a lot more common than it is today. Interested? Stick around. We'll be talking about it next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.